Alright guys, it's Mike Five from Lights and Lines, your favourite independent record label. This week on the Inner Sleeve podcast, we're talking about music culture. Was it better pre-internet? Have the beliefs, behaviours, values and material objects we associate with music culture, subculture, counterculture, have they all largely stayed the same? Or did we have a stronger connection to the music when we worked so hard to seek it out and share it before the heady days of being able to just type in a thing and find an answer? And does any of that really matter anyway? Don't know. Interesting conversation. Hope you enjoy it. If you like the podcast and what we're doing, please do hit subscribe and why not tell your friends? Cheers, guys.
So this week we're talking about music culture and was it better or worse pre-internet? And Graham, I think today we're going to start with you.
To be honest, I kind of hate thinking of those terms. My thing about all that is the fact is that all new technologies, you look back through history, all new technology is like you have this period where everyone thinks this is going to be this revolutionary, amazing new thing. It's going to change everyone's lives. We are not going to know what our lives are like. Suddenly our lives are going to be so easy and perfect and it'll be a utopia. And then there'll be a brief period where everyone says this new technology is the devil. It is ruining everything. Everyone is stupider. They're worse. I wish we could go back. And then after that, there's this plateau where you kind of learn that, yeah, it's neither one thing nor the other. It has its good sides. It has its bad sides. So I just sort of think of it that way. I mean, the one good thing I think about music culture is, and I have no way of confirming this, but I feel like it sort of killed that horrible period that I remember where everyone was specifically into one thing. You could only like a certain genre. That was your genre. Or like if you liked a certain band.
You could be a goth, for example.
Kind of, yeah. You know, there was this period where it was like that was your thing and that was all you were into. You know, it was like you didn't get to veer outside that. And then Now it's like everyone kind of just, that's cool. I love a bit of the Bee Gees. Amazing. Actually, as well, a bit of Barbra Streisand and Evanescence and, you know,
all your favorite
classical music. And, well, I don't, the only one I actually particularly like is the Bee Gees there. I was just trying to think of less bluesy references because I did a short video about this for TikTok and I realized that all the examples I gave, there was not a woman in sight, and I was just like you know my misogyny, my latent and internalized misogyny is showing. So I was trying to think of some woman to put in there, but you know what I mean, there's a sort of a, I don't know if it allowed people to be diverse in their music taste and, you know, what they're drawn to and stuff, but I just feel like it's not as rigid now. You know, people aren't as rigidly one thing.
I see what you're saying. There are aspects of the pre-internet culture that I miss. And I miss particularly like you and someone else who's really into the same stuff being able to totally geek out about like rare stuff that only you know about. Do you know what I mean? And that kind of sort of exclusivity almost that you could have if you were like a super fan of one particular band together. And it sort of bonded you in lots of different ways because you had to work really hard to get that information in a way that you don't have to work hard to get that information now. And I miss the like Saturday afternoons spent just going from music shop to music shop, just diving through loads of vinyl and CDs looking for interesting shit. Do you know what I mean? All of that. And the people that it attracted and the whole kind of like culture around that culture of knowledgeability in music that bonded you in social groups was quite nice to an extent. And at the same time, I also really like the fact that these days you can get really, really, really into something. You can get really into a genre or a subgenre or a band or an artist, and you can go as far as you possibly can in a very short time. So that sort of like gets you from casual fan to super fan really quickly in some instances, because you go, oh, I really like that track that I heard. Oh, they got a whole album. Man, I really enjoyed that album. I'm going to listen to everything they've done now. And now that I've finished all their albums, I'm on to the B-sides or the rarities or the acoustic stuff or the, do you know what I mean? Demos. And
Or the obscure interview that you did for this podcast randomly one evening in 2008. I've done a lot of those.
But as you said yourself, there's pluses and minuses to the whole thing. And I think in some respects it's too easy, because the whole, like, what I dislike about where we are now is that because it's so easy to get everything that you want about a certain thing that you like, it's devalued a lot of that. Yeah. Whereas there was so much more value placed on music in the pre-internet era, it felt like, at the time. You know, like, you had that copy, you had that Nirvana bootleg, or you had that rare album of B-sides by REM or whatever it happened to be. And some of that I miss, those picture discs that you could get, and they only did a limited quantity and all that sort of thing. I had this like blue vinyl 7-inch Nirvana single, and it was a double A side with Jesus Lizard, who I never heard of again. But like, getting hold of that was really bloody difficult, and but it felt like a real achievement once you had it. I didn't just go on Amazon and click buy. Do you see what I mean? I had to really work for that. I had to go looking for it. I had to hunt it down.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Yeah. I mean, I think to come back at that a little bit, I do remember a period, maybe somewhere between 2010 and 2014, 2015, where there was, a bit of a resurgence of people gathering around record shops and being a bit more into physical, the physical pressings or whatever of records and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe not necessarily B-sides and exactly what you're talking about, the rarities kind of side of it, but there was like an RSD kind of culture that was coming in through record shops and stuff again. And that all seems to have gone away again. And I propose that quite a lot of the reason that has gone away so profoundly now, I'm not saying it isn't entirely, you know, the internet hasn't played a part, but is literally because of recession and lockdown. You know, I think the decimation of people's finances and hope, frankly, has just sort of, you know, it sort of killed what I thought was the seeds of a resurgence of that.
There's an interesting point in that, right? Because like this, so like, what is culture? Like, it's a set of beliefs, behaviors, stuff, like, you know, material things, CDs, records, tapes, you know, that sort of stuff. It's kind of, you know, we share value systems, and it's often around, you know, art or music or literature or lifestyle or whatever, right? But so on the one hand, culture changes with time. Like, there was a period post-war where young girls, like teenage girls, went out and could get jobs, and suddenly they had disposable income. And that kind of informed, you know, the sexual revolution in the 60s in the way that we view the 60s now, as opposed to, you know, pre-war, where it was very, you know, stiff upper lip and women in their place, blah, blah, blah. And I feel like music culture kind of naturally follows, you know, political trends, if you like, or economic trends. But fundamentally, it's really interesting listening to this conversation, right? Because how much has it, like, have our beliefs changed, you know, really? Our behaviours have changed a bit. Like, I go digging for music on Bandcamp rather than in the record store, but I'm still doing the same thing. I'm still looking up. I mean, Bandcamp's a brilliant place to go. I call it Bandcamp dipping. It's like bin dipping, right? So you go and you find, you got all those genre selections, and you click on a genre or even a location. I did a thing for New Music Saturday once where we picked a city or a town or a state or a country sometimes. I went and found five artists from that state and emailed them and said, could you play one of your tracks on our podcast? We did just a feature on, you know, here's some bands from Croatia. And I kind of like, so you can do that in the same way that you would flick through records or CDs or whatever in HMV, Virgin Records, you know, whatever. It's just that it's a different medium. And the stuff that we buy and the things that we think and the idea of music in particular, like alternative music, subculture, counterculture, the different from the mainstream kind of side of it, I don't think it's fundamentally that different. But I do think the trends change in line with, do people have money to go to gigs? If they don't have a lot of disposable income, there's a recession, the gigs kind of get put down a bit, and then something else goes up, and then now we've got bands touring again because they're not making any money from streaming, and people have got a bit more money because we're 5 years out of COVID. Supposedly, I don't know how, because I seem to be poorer, but supposedly people have got more money to spend. I guess it's young people.
I'll tell you what has changed, though. What has changed significantly is the air of mystery that used to exist amongst artists that you loved, right? Because you used to wonder about what their political beliefs were in some cases, or how they felt on certain things. And, you know, you pored over their lyrics and you listened to their albums very carefully in order to form an idea of who they were. And then you would maybe read an interview in a music magazine that gave you more insight into who your favorite artist was. But you still, you wouldn't know what they thought about the latest TV show or whatever was trendy at the time. And now, although there are still a handful of artists who exist in that sort of enigmatic, mysterious sphere and forgo all social media, most people are on social media, on the internet, broadcasting how they feel about stuff all the time. And it's very easy to find out more and more and more information about the people that you like. So I kind of miss the unknowable quality. That's what I miss. And the other thing I was going to say is that the other thing that's changed significantly is there's just so much music now. There's so much because the barrier to entry to record and release music is so much lower, as we all know, because we all do it and we're all really grateful for that. But because of that, you have to sift through even more music than ever before, which, you know, is no bad thing. But the volume means that you're up as an artist, you're up against so much more than competition just for people's attention than you ever were pre-internet.
I think that's actually, it's a really good point, right? Because one of the things, talking pre and post internet, it's like the internet existed in the 90s, right? But it's that kind of, you know, web 2.0, hamster social. But I suppose the thing is, the idea of the democratization of music, which in theory is lovely, but actually in reality isn't, because you are flooded with absolutely everything. And also there is no democracy. The democracy runs on who can pay for the most adverts or get the most financial backing from, you know, big major label A or whatever. And so we're still kind of in these tiers of, you know, the rich and the famous and the 1% or whatever.
Yeah.
and then, you know, the unsigned at the bottom. And actually, interesting, there's less of a middle. It's so much harder for an unsigned independent artist, or unsigned as in not such a major, but for an independent artist, it's so much harder for them to break through and up, because normally, you know, in the past, they would go on tour and support other bands and do all the kind of DIY stuff. And I think the barrier to entry is much, much harder because there's so much noise and there's so much more cost involved with that. And so,
the costs are so huge.
We miss the next Oasis playing in the, you know, Tunbridge Wells Forum, which is like a 150.
I was just like to chip in and say that I am very, very glad of that. Thank you very much.
If
we could somehow erase the original Oasis as well, I would love us to be able to do that. Can the internet do that for me?
I mentioned Oasis because I know they happen to play a venue that I've played in that holds no more than 150 people, right? But I don't think the next big band is doing that anymore, because I think that middle tier, whoever it might be, like all of your favourite bands from days gone by, did that kind of toilet circuit, it was called the toilet circuit, interestingly, because that particular venue used to be a public toilet, and that name caught on through into the owner and the enemy, I think. But anyway, that's a side note, but I think that's harder, right? And I think that is something that has changed in terms of the culture of music and discovery, like this idea that we can democratize and people can do what they want. On the one hand, you know, like, I read a great book called Our Band Could Be Your Life, and it talks about like Black Flag and Minor Threat, all these bands, and this whole counterculture that just surged through the States in the late 80s, that kind of noise punk, you know, whatever, hardcore kind of thing that happened. And it was amazing, right? It's really, really interesting. Now I would hear about that as it was happening via the internet. That's a cool thing. I could be part of that. But equally, I might not hear about it because there's so much other shit around. So it's kind of, I don't know where it sits, right? I don't know how I feel, because you've got everything, but then it's difficult to find anything. And I think that's a real challenge.
Yeah. We're all just single needles in multiple haystacks now, and that is difficult from a visibility point of view, and difficult from a I'm trying to break through point of view. But great for those of us that love choice. So you've more choice than ever before. Have you got more quality than ever before? Is another question. But perhaps that's a topic for another time.
Oh, I was about to try and answer that one too.
Well, you go ahead then.
No, I'm with you.
I feel there was probably always, I know for a fact, there was always stuff that wasn't very good quality. There were always people writing songs that I thought were very good.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Very good, yeah. So.
Yes, I mean, but those people didn't have a chance to like
speak to the world.
Have everything out on. Not in the same way that they do now, because
yes, there were absolutely were. There have always been, you know, bands and singers and whatnot, and you know, people that got noticed that didn't necessarily deserve to be noticed above, you know, a fucking litany of other acts. The fact is, the democratization of music now means that most of the, like, think about all the great bands and composers and songwriters and things like that that were never heard because they never got recorded. Think about some dingy backwater pub in the highlands of fuck knows where. Some guy comes in with an acoustic guitar, or girl, obviously, yeah, and sits in front of a microphone in this dingy little pub and literally plays this, like, has people in tears and up dancing and joyful and, you know, feeling something as a human being, and that person never got anything recorded and just disappeared into the obscurity.
Yeah.
Now that person can go and record something, and someone could possibly discover them. You know, so now mixed in with, and I'm sorry, I'm going to fucking throw the name out there that, you know, may spark some controversy, but now mixed in amongst the mediocrity of your Madonnas, of your Oasises, of, you know, fucking, I don't know, Duran, you have the people that are genuinely remarkable but never got the chance. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm just saying that there's more and more people in the same field now competing for attention, and that there are good sides and bad sides to that, aren't there?
Yeah.
That's the second podcast and why you hate Oasis so much, because I think they're fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I know, Mike, but
I've been working very hard.
He isn't alone, though.
To look past that. Do you know?
Yeah, you're not alone. They never spoke to me either.
My thing about them isn't even that they're that terrible. My thing about them is that they are, that anyone could have been them. That they didn't do anything particularly new or exciting. You know, it had been done before, it had been done better before, and they wander around with that fucking inflated sense of entitlement and like they deserve something. When what did they fucking do? Do you know what I mean? The lyrics were nonsense. The chord structures were...
Flip side is anyone could have done it, but no one else did.
But that's my point. I think they did.
They didn't do it.
No, what I'm saying is, you go back through rock and roll records that were made, you'll find every single element of their songs. Everything that they did is just a regurgitation of all that. You know, it's not particularly exciting.
There's no sonic tapestry
to it that makes you go, "Shit, who the fuck did that before?"
No, but it's just good genes. Anyway, that's a separate podcast.
I don't know, we probably talked for quite a long time. That's a separate podcast. Those are not even wanted on this podcast. We have to go and start our own podcast for that shit.
Yeah.
That would be fun, though, wouldn't it? We could discuss Oasis. We could discuss... I don't know. We could get people in that hate Shakespeare or something. You know, we could just discuss these, like... You know, things that people love and go, "Why do you hate that?"
That'd be amazing. I would fucking love to do that. Yeah.
Verily, forsooth, why dost thou hate?
We'd have to speak. So you're suggesting we'd have to speak an iambic pentameter to destroy the man?
Yeah. Nice. There's a man who's had some classical training. I like it.
Fucking right, man. Grammar school education.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Inner Sleeve podcast by Lights and Lines. If you enjoyed the podcast, why not hit subscribe and tell a friend? It really helps us out. For more information on the label, our amazing artists, and our latest releases, head over to headlightsandwhitelines.com.